happens. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report. Crews with cadaver dogs are searching the rubble left behind by the wildfires in the Los Angeles area. At least five people have died. The biggest fires are still 0% contained. This man returned to his Altadena home, at least the spot where it used to be.
We had so many incredible memories with the pool, and I got here and I looked down at the pool full of water, and I mean, the irony of it is inescapable. Like, there's all this water, and then it was useless.
LA Fire Chief Kristen Crowley says these were the most destructive fires in Los Angeles' history.
Preliminary reports estimate the damage or destroyed structures to be in the thousands.
LA County Fire Chief Anthony Maroney says the red flag warning is still in effect.
The National Weather Service predicts the warning will remain in effect for Los Angeles County and the majority of Ventura County through Friday.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Wallace.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Brittany Merlot. The University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point got a new chief of police. Derek Tritz tells us more.
Chief Michelle Haywood was sworn in on Monday as the new Chief of Police and Security Services for the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Haywood is an experienced law enforcement officer with 27 years of service in the Milwaukee Police Department. She has completed training in active standbyship for law enforcement through the FBI National Academy and is active in professional law enforcement organizations, such as the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. Haywood now reports to Pratima Gandhi, the Vice Chancellor of Business Affairs at the university, who said she's looking forward to Haywood's leadership and believes that her extensive experience will help maintain a high standard of safety for both students and faculty. Tony Babel, the university's previous chief, retired at the end of 2024 after nearly 7 years of service, during which he played an integral role in the university's response to the pandemic.
And the store, convenience stores in central Wisconsin, have transitioned to a new operator. Reliance Fuel, a Pennsylvania-based company, acquired the store locations from Team Sherrill in late December. They say all associates have retained their positions and all current locations remain open. Reliance Fuel will continue to offer the Impact Rewards Plus program. And they say in the future, the store will be updated to carry its Fuel on Wisconsin branding. Team Sherrill will continue to operate 7 Sherrill Tire and Auto Service locations and 30 Subway restaurants. And a study on PFAS and wastewater shows an increase in the so-called forever chemicals. A concerning trend is nearly half of all drinking water is contaminated now. Scientists say that some of the factors for the increase include the use of chemicals and medication and the effects of drought on local water systems. I'm Brittany Merlot for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Packers prepare for Philly. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers face the Eagles in Philadelphia Sunday in the wild card playoffs. The Eagles have one of the top-ranked defenses in the league under coordinator Vic Fangio. I asked Matt LaFleur what makes them so tough.
You just don't see a whole lot of open space, a lot of gotcha plays. You're going to have to earn it, because if they get you in third and long, it's a nightmare.
College basketball, two of the Badgers men's team dealing with injuries. Max Klesmet in a walking boot after injuring his right ankle. Nolan Winter, able to practice despite suffering a deep cut to his finger the other night. Wisconsin hosts Minnesota Friday night. NBA, the Bucks with a 121-105 blowout over the Spurs. A.J. Green with 14 points asked, how do you defend 7'3" Victor Wembanyama?
Just be physical and crawl up under him, try to make him uncomfortable, stab at the dribble. That's what coaches wanted us to do, and I think that's how you got to try and guard them.
That's the Bucks' A.J. Green with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Have you listened to Community Stories yet? The show that features voices from right here in our community? Well, for the month of January, you can catch up on podcasts of past episodes on our website at civicmedia.us. The show's going on vacation for a month, but Community Stories will return in February, tanned and well-rested. Okay, maybe not, but the stories will be fresh and engaging. Keep your dial tuned to WFHR for updates on the new schedule, guests, and stories from right here in our community.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight with scattered flurries and snow showers. Lows mid-teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow. Highs upper 20s. Dry Saturday, more snow possible late Saturday night and Sunday. Weekend highs in the mid to upper 20s.
It's 28 degrees right now. Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Big show. Former Wisconsin Badger Brady Ewing on the program, as well as Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, January 9th, 2025. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At part two, we're going to speak with Matt Lipper, UW-Madison Extension Wood County Ag Agent. Right now, we have with us on the phone, Gary O. Gary is joining us to talk about the Central Wisconsin Modeling Railroaders train show coming up January 11th through the 12th over at the Holiday Inn. We're talking about the 27th annual one, and we'll be talking about that in a moment. Gary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, James, for having me on.
Gary, I appreciate the time, and I'm looking forward to diving into model training with you and talking about this more. But first, if you don't mind, I am a history buff. I love the origin stories of things. Can we talk about a little bit of the history of the 27th Annual Model Railroad Show and Sale?
Boy, and I love history, too. We're on the same page.
All right.
Sure, the history of the train show, most of us belong to multiple railroad clubs. We all do conventions. We all do shows. We're trying to promote the hobby. And if you look at the Central Wisconsin Model Railroaders, which is located in Stevens Point, this is our 27th year. People have come in the past. I mean, we used to be at the old Holodome downtown. We've moved it around. It's really nice at the new convention center, but it brings people together. It's so fun to see families with their kids, and the kids are so excited they cry when they have to leave because they see trains and there's Thomas the Tank and all the stuff like that. So it's really a wonderful event. We've been doing it for a long time. I've been coming to this. I came to the show well before I even moved to Stevens Point. So it's a good show.
It looks like a group of people got together back in 1987, and it really got the ball really got rolling there. The train really got on the tracks there. If I can, there's the metaphor I was looking
and
for.
And I know a lot of those people, and sad to say, some of them paid away. But you look at the club here, and they restored the Bancroft Depot that's in Heritage Park, kind of down by Quick Trip, right off of Polar B there. And they did the caboose. I mean, we all try to restore the history. We're all history buffs, like you. We like to preserve this for generations to come, and it's fun.
The 27th annual show will be Saturday 9 to 5 and Sunday 10 to 3. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But first, Gary, what is model railroading?
Well, we in the hobby call it the world's greatest hobby. It's so multifaceted. I mean, there's so much to do it. And the cool thing is, model railroaders, train hobbyists, you create a three-dimensional railroad. It's something actual. It's not a pitch or whatever. I mean, it's a 3D thing. It's got life to it. It's a mix of nostalgia and history. So, if you grew up sometime and you really liked that period of time, you can actually create that in time. So it's a historical thing. Other people I know, they like going out west. Guess what they have on their layouts? They have Colorado mountains and stuff, and they have the roads from out there because as a kid, that's what they used to do. Or the grandparents used to work for the Sioux Line. It just goes on and on. But the cool thing about model roading, all age groups enjoy it. You can be from the smallest to the oldest. It's such a neat hobby.
It's got such a wide range of people involved in it too. I noticed this when I was doing some research this weekend on our conversation we were going to have, and it just seems like any type of person you can think of, young, old, all different races and sexes and everything. It just seems like a big group of people, which is always fun to me. I think whenever you find a hobby that you're interested in, that part of it is great. But then you find that group of people that are also interested in it, and just kind of heightens the hobby.
Yeah, You can be in a wheelchair and enjoy model railroading. I mean, mm-hmm. how many hobbies can you do that in? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, Gary, how did you get started into this?
I actually had, like most kids, I had a Lionel train set. I had four sisters, so they had the Barbies, and I had a little corner in the basement for my train set, so that's how I grew up. And then two boys, I made the first one wanted to get into model trains. I was part of a railroad club. He had so much fun, go every weekend, and then the other one did too, and made the kids save $100 each, and we started model trains, and one is really into it, the other one, and he moved into some other things, but he still likes coming to the shows. So I've been doing this, since I probably been 8 or 9 years old.
That's really cool to hear. And it's great. It feels so good. As a dad, I mean, you said that, and I immediately my heart filled up. Just the idea of passing this on to your kids and them getting into something you got into and some of that. That's pretty cool. But you mentioned something there too, Gary, with showing it to your kids. And I immediately thought of, I always love the add-ons to things. And it feels like, well, this is a fun hobby. It's interesting. It gets a lot of creativity out there, and you can be very creative with it. It also teaches a lot of patience from what I've read. It also teaches a lot of things that we try to teach our kids, but whether we're successful at it or not, we may try to teach them. This seems like a really cool hobby where they're having fun, but they're also learning, some life skills involved in this.
My oldest son, he'd come home from school. Dad would have all the parts cut out. Him and two or three of his friends would come over and screw all the decking down. They'd have so much making stuff. They were so proud of what they're making. They were making stuff with their hands. I mean,
yes.
It's not reading out of a book. It's not playing on a computer. It's not playing on a phone or whatever. You get to make stuff. They learn wiring. They learn. It's such a neat hobby.
There is so much to that. Very well put. You can create things on Minecraft and things like that, I'm sure. But when you're physically doing something with your hands and then you see the finished product physically in real life, there's something different about that. And I think a lot of people are nodding their head at that one, whether they're it's making a model train or even putting a Lego set together. You can kind of relate to that, I think. I appreciate you sharing that, Gary. Now to kind of to go to the origin story of where this all started, where model railroading started.
And like you doing research, I did the same thing, and I knew a lot of these answers, but you look at trains. It basically started in Europe. That's when we had the first steam engines. Way back in 1860, they started making wood trains, toys and engines and stuff for kids to push around because they wanted to have their own because they'd see it running along the tracks.
How wild is that? I would have never guessed that. I think that is so cool. That's pretty interesting.
And they're expensive to buy. They're antique.
I bet. And then in 1875, things got going even further with this.
And that's when tin plate came out. And it's basically like a tin can that you get your vegetables in. They make cars out of tin plate. Tin, they bend them and they paint them. And you can start getting things a little more realistic. And the cool thing back then is they were wind-up engines. You had a key. And you might have seen some of those from great-great-grandparents and stuff. You'd wind up and they'd go around the track and make a lot of noise and whatever. So yeah. 1875 was kind of key thing, 1897.
Oh, we're losing you a little bit
there. Sorry, electric motors. It didn't take too long to put an electric motor in a train engine.
Which is wild to think of.
And you think how long ago that was, too. I mean,
yeah.
1860s, 150 years ago. But 1897 was key, yeah.
Because that's when they really started to not just adapt this, but other toys with incorporating this new electricity that we had and everything.
I had a robot, electric robot, when I was a battery robot with a kid. You know how much fun that was to play with?
Yeah. 1901, things really got moving then, too.
Yeah, Lionel started. I can't remember his first name, but Lionel Train started. He's got initials to it, and that really took it off. You started seeing train sets at Christmas stores. Disney got involved with it. Walt Disney had a five-acre thing by his house that he had a big train layout going. It was 1/8 scale. A lot of that was how he developed Disneyland. And if you guys remember Steam Car Willie,
mm-hmm.
That was the first train appearing on TV. I mean, all that just got kids and everybody excited about trains.
And then in the 40s, they started incorporating some more stuff with that.
And that big thing is, and I don't know if that's good or bad for our country, for environment, but plastic injection started. They started making plastic parts, and then we could start getting cars, engines, and trucks that actually looked really good. And that's really when the hobby started taking off, because then you could start painting and customizing stuff your own. And you look at today, you can buy anything, you can make anything. This 3D printing, I don't know if, James, if you've been exposed to 3D printing,
mm-hmm.
where Oh, it's just unbelievable what you can make on it. You can make anything now.
It is incredible. And it's, to me, one of the cooler things to see is when something new, some new tech like 3D printing assists and helps out something that we've been, that has been around for a while. And something like this, it just brings it to a whole new audience, a whole new generation.
James, I don't know how old you are. Did you have a train as a kid?
I had a Lincoln log train. I had a little wooden one. I had it was really fun. I remember playing with. My papa was a semi driver, and he was really into trains. And I grew up in Chicago, so you got the L train. You got all kinds of, you know, trains are a big part of your life when you grow up in that area. You got Union Station and all that. So I've always had a love of trains and riding in them. It wasn't until I had kids that I started to get them a train set and really got into the whole idea of it, the hobby of it, and everything. It's a really fun hobby.
Well, you remember the old power packs? You'd hook it up and you just put the knobs back and forth. Some had a push button to run the horn.
Yeah.
Well, kids are running trains now with their telephones, smartphones, called Engine Driver. There's a couple of you put it on your phone. You run the, you log in, put the engine number into your phone, and you run the train with your phone on the outside of the layout. You don't even have to.
I saw that and it blew me away. I thought that was, I didn't even know about that until this weekend. I thought that was awesome. That is a really cool part. And another neat thing about this, I would think, Gary, is we're just getting started on seeing how tech and how these things can really impact this hobby.
Yeah, it's growing. I'm having troubles keeping up with technology. I'm 69 years old and the kids have no problem with this. I mean, you got a problem, you ask a fifth grader these days.
Yeah, right. And now we're speaking with Gary O, and we're talking about the 27th annual Model Railroad Show in Sale that is coming to Stevens Point January 11th and 12th, the Arctic Run 2025. You mentioned this is a multifaceted hobby. What, can we get a little deeper into that? What do you mean by that, Gary?
Sure, we're going to go back to your history. Most people, they're building a train. Well, you want to learn the history. You got a specific train or where you want to have it routed, you know. Mine's going to be based basically from Plover up to Wausau, up to Rhineland or to Green Bay, and back to Wapak and things. I'm going to have a whole route. You're going to recognize buildings. I mean, I'm going to have a Point Brewery on it, McCain Foods. I'm going to have industry so I can have my train do stuff. So people do, it's a history thing. And then, you know, and that leading into it, you know, what do you want to have for industries? What do you want to have for towns? What do you want to have for landscape scenes? Do you want to have hills? Do you want to have mountains? Do you want to have lots of trees? What do you want to name your industries after? A lot of people name them after their friends, or if they got downtown Main Street buildings, they name them after family members. It's so much fun. Then you get to plan, design it. A lot of people take photos of what they want to do or go to the library, and they'll try to match the scene exactly. Mm. I mean, right down to the period car or whatever. It's so much fun. And the best thing about this hobby, you use just a ton of skill sets, carpentry, electrical, how to paint, how to make mountains, how to make trees. And I mean, it's such a cool thing. And everybody has skills, and we get together, and they always come together.
And then once you do this, you get to operate the trains.
Oh, that's the fun part. You know, you get to operate trains, and the whole layout comes to life. It's just unbelievable. People come over, and it's, yeah. In our days, when we were small, we just ran the trains round and round. Well, now this time, hey, you're dropping off trains. You got passengers. Now you got to, I got to drop some tank cars at the paper mill, and I got to pick up their paper stock, just like the real railroad. You actually make just like a real railroad to run. It's real. You're actually, and a lot of our hobbyists are actually former railroad engineers and conductors, and they're really fun. I've been in some operating sessions. People, you have to use hand signals just like they do when they're unhooking and hacking cars. They don't even talk. They just do just like the railroad. Mm-hmm. They're recreating history.
That's really cool. Not only that, recreating of history, but giving opportunity for some understanding of these positions, these jobs. You know, you get your kid involved in this, and we just never know where a spark may start in a child. And yes, maybe it starts a love affair with this hobby. It may even start a love affair with just trains in general and working in that industry. And we could always use more good people in that industry.
Well, they learn skills that they can use in the real world. I mean, I got three kids. My daughter went to UW-Madison. She was the one always helping the boys change light bulbs in their cars now because she knew how to use a 10-millimeter socket or trying new stuff. I mean, I taught my kids how to do all that stuff. It's a perfect opportunity for dads to teach their kids how to do things and have fun at the same time. And I've seen things, a lot of these shows, the grandparents bring the kids, and the kids don't want to. They have so much fun with grandma and grandpa.
They just as a side note too, while I don't know, I've seen a lot of different people involved in this when you look at pictures and history of this event. But this event has grown so much, not just with sons and grandparents and all that and dads, but women have gotten a lot more involved in this in recent years.
They are the best artistic people for paint and scenery and stuff. Mm. I can't, you know, you want to do something, you let them paint it. I mean, if you want a mountain scene or you want clouds in the distance, they just have more fun doing that stuff.
Yeah, and Gary, I can't even draw a stick figure, so I hear you. I completely agree with you, man. Yeah. And just touching on that part, going back just for a second, because in doing the research for this, and I really didn't know much about this hobby, but I appreciate not only you joining us and sharing this information and more people can know, but for me personally, I was blown away by how much I would enjoy this hobby if I gave it a chance, and I think I'm going to. One of the things that I really enjoy, I'm a planner. I like planning things out. I like mapping things out. And I never really thought much about the idea of, okay, you decide you want to do this. The next step is kind of planning and mapping out what you want to do, how you want your train to look, the things that Gary was just telling you about. That part sounded so cool to me. All these other things are fantastic and awesome and getting to operate the train and everything. But the idea of mapping this out the way you like to, what you want, that seemed really cool. That seemed like a really fun part of this.
Well, I'm going to have Wausau Insurance up in Wausau. I always thought that building was so cool, that depot up there. I mean, you find stuff, you say, oh, I'm from Green Bay. I'm going to have some Green Bay landmarks on there.
It's pretty cool.
When people come to visit, they go, geez, that's the old Red All Warehouse. I remember that.
That's awesome. Gary, what is the best way to get into this hobby?
Well, your great lead-in question. You want to come to a model train show. You need to come to a trial train show. You get to see stuff. I mean, there's all different sizes of trains, from littlest ones to the biggest ones, garden scale. I mean, it's unbelievable what you get to see, and it'll plant a seed. And you'll probably walk away buying a few things, or at least coming back with a lot of ideas. Mm. But I think that's the number one thing. And then my next one, which is really important, don't try to do it on your own. Mm. Join a model railroad club. That was the best thing. My kids would just love to go, and they had to do their homework first because the meeting, and they'd get their homework done ready because we were going to the train club show, and they'd have so much fun. We'd work on the layout for the club layout and stuff. But I think the next thing is a model railroad club, because what's going to happen is you're going to have people come join you that have skills that you don't have. You're going to learn just as much. You're going to learn so much more, and you're going to do it so much better the first time around.
There are a lot of great organizations in our locally in our area, too, that you could check out to find out more about this.
Yeah. Central Wisconsin Model Railroad Clubs in Stevens Point, that's the club that's hosting this one. They've been around 40 years at least, and they meet every Wednesday of the first Wednesday of the month at Heritage Park in Plover. If you remember where I mentioned earlier about the Bancroft Depot, they actually remodeled. They meet in the basement, and they get together. And you just need to be 18 years old to become a member. Okay, if not, your dad has to bring you. If you're underage, there's no dues, and it's just to have fun. And then there's other clubs. WAPACA will be at the show. I'll be running with them the weekend. Wisconsin, Michigan, which is out of Marinette, Menominee, where I used to live, I'll be with them running some of the day. I know so many people, different club members all over the country. It's unbelievable how you get to meet people. I know there's a really nice club. If you ever get a chance to go up to Yankee Museum up in Wausau, the Wisconsin Valley Model Railroad Club, it's actually what they call the paper route, which is to go from Wisconsin Rapids up to Wausau. They're modeling that. It is the coolest thing. If you like history, you want to go see that layout. And if you go with them when they're running it, that's even better. They will let you run a train.
There are so many great opportunities for people to find out more. And Gary, as we're closing with, could you give us the details on the model train show this weekend?
Sure, James. Again, I just said it's the 27th annual Arctic Run Model Railroad Show and sale. They actually sell stuff there. It'll be at the Holiday Inn Convention Center. I'll give you the address. People put it in their GPS. 1001 Amber Avenue in Stevens Point, but it's basically off of Highway 10. It's just a little bit east of Fleet Farm and where the new Hobby Lobby is. It's just kind of north across the street from it, right next to the Holiday Inn. You can't miss it. It's really easy to find. Admission is $5 for adults, $2 for kids or for children age 12 to 17, but under is free. And the reason they charge is they have to pay for the facility, but any money that's after expenses of that expense, everything goes to nonprofit, goes to local charities, because all the railroad clubs are nonprofit. We're members. We don't get paid or anything. We're just doing this to promote the hobby and to have fun. So it's kind of a cool thing. And I'm hoping a lot of your listeners and even you come to the show.
I would love to. I really would. It's going to be a really fun event. And we want to remind everybody that not only is this fun for people that want to, that are into the hobby, but people that want to find out about the hobby. Head on over there. Ask your questions. The gang over there is looking forward to answering those. And it's something that we've touched on a little bit as throughout the conversation. We know that there's plenty of people out there in these winter months that are isolated a little bit more than others, or maybe don't get out as much as they'd like to. This is a great opportunity to get out, meet some new people, hang out, and meet some people that have a great hobby and a great interest. And I think just even that, just showing up and asking your questions, I think will lead to a great time.
And they have the Holiday Inn does a super job. They'll have food for us. It's reasonable compared to other cities. I'm hoping we have the banjo player there playing railroad songs again. He's just a character. He does the thing. But they use both sides of the convention center. So if that middle section, they take the whole left side, which is like usually three or four rooms, plus they take the right side. We fill the whole thing. It's unbelievable how much you'll see.
Gary, I feel like we buried a bit of the lead. I love banjo. I love banjo players. That's awesome. That's fantastic. What a great addition to that. And I think you mentioned this earlier, the Central Wisconsin Model Railroaders have a great Facebook page. Go ahead and check that out. You can find out more information there and find out more about model train hobbying there as well. Gary, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
I'm hoping you come this weekend and look for me, because I'll let you. I got a remote control. You can run the train on the outside and blow the horn as it goes through intersections. You'll stop and beep past. You might have to back trains up just like the real thing.
Man, that is awesome. Thank you. Thank
It'll
you for
make
offering
you a kid
that.
Again. It'll
yes,
make you a
it,
kid
it,
again.
It, just talking about it just made me a kid again. Just thinking about it does, man. It sounds great. And wishing you guys a fun, successful weekend. Enjoy it. And Gary, you did too good of a job. You're going to have to come back sometime, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the time,
Gary.
Me too. And we'll be back with more Midday Magazine right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
One day it's bone-chilling cold. The next, the sun is shining. Hey, it's Wisconsin. Don't like the weather? Wait 10 minutes. It'll change. Sooner or later, the snow will go away. But right now, it's freezing cold. And all that cold weather can cause freeze-ups in your holding tank or septic pipe system. So be sure that you keep an eye out for trouble. And call Crockett Septic to help you if you encounter a jam. Call Crockett Septic today at 715-712-3456. Crockett Septic, where the trucks smell like sweet cherry pie.
Crockett Septic serves you near or far. Holding tanks, septics pump right there in your yard. They got porta potties ready for you too. They'll pump away that stinky nasty poo. Crockett Septic, be there in a jiff. Crockett Septic, no more nasty whiff. Crockett Septic, they won't make you cry. Their pumper trucks smell just like cherry pie.
Yeehaw!
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Ready, set, go. Get in the game and be heard with WFHR's Playmakers. Join us 5 to 6 Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're here to take your calls, sports takes, and ramblings. We'll have breaking stories, game day conversations with players, coaches, and you. Nobody ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Join the team here at WFHR 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for WFHR's Playmakers.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Brittany Merlau. The nation is remembering Jimmy Carter today. One of his lasting legacies is undoubtedly Habitat for Humanity. The Carters were huge advocates for the nonprofit. In 1989, Milwaukee Habitat hadn't built its first home yet. But then the Carters came. Milwaukee Habitat CEO Brian Sonderman says Carter and his wife Rosalind brought compassion to the work site.
The former president and first lady came to Milwaukee, mobilized over 1,000 volunteers, built 6 brand new homes, completed them in 1 week, as well as doing 8 rehabbed homes in the Walnut Hill neighborhood of Milwaukee. So to say that this put Milwaukee Habitat on the map is an understatement.
And the trip almost wasn't a success due to rainy weather that threatened to derail the project. But Carter took up the news stations to appeal to roofers in the area. Sonderman recalls that they showed up in droves in response and completed the roofing for all 6 homes in just 1 day.
He said on more than one occasion that his faith demanded that he do what he did. And I think that's a great example for those people of faith to not only talk about it with their words, but to put their faith into action.
Sonderman says Carter found that in Habitat for Humanity by serving his neighbor and loving them as himself. And all federal government buildings are closed today as a national day of mourning for former President Jimmy Carter. He died on December 29th at 100 years old. President Joe Biden will deliver a eulogy at Carter's funeral today. And President-elect Donald Trump is expected to attend the service. The U.S. Postal Service will not deliver mail today, and federal offices and departments are closed. In addition, the stock exchange will not have trading as well. Flags at government buildings will fly at half staff through January 28th. I'm Brittany Merlot for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The effect of the fires in Los Angeles have been devastating. The ultimate impact on the entertainment business remains to be seen, but 2 notable premieres were canceled due to the fires, including Universal's Wolfman, which was scheduled to have its premiere at the TCL Chinese Theater Tuesday night. Jennifer Lopez's Unstoppable premiere was also canceled Tuesday night. There is no word on whether or not the events will be rescheduled. Wolfman is set to hit theaters on Martin Luther King Day weekend. Matthew Perry has managed to stay in the news fairly often following his mysterious death in 2023. His friend's colleague Lisa Kudrow made news the other day when she appeared on the Drew Barrymore show and told Barrymore that Perry gave her the famous Friends cookie jar from the set as a parting gift after the last episode. Kudrow added that Perry left a note in the cookie jar that she only recently discovered after his death. It is unclear why Kudrow checked the cookie jar after all these years. Maybe a serious case of the munchies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Waba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight with scattered flurries and snow showers. Lows mid-teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow. Highs upper 20s. Dry Saturday. More snow possible late Saturday night and Sunday. Weekend highs in the mid to upper 20s. Currently it's 26.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid, too, even if they've applied in the past. Enrollment is always open. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and a thought about whether fancy cookware is worth your hard-earned dollars. I love cooking, so I have done a lot of research to figure out what is worth my money. One thing I know, fancy nonstick is a no-go. Don't do it. Nonstick pans wear out after a year, maybe 2. Once the surface of the pan gets all scrapey-scratchy, you gotta throw it out and you gotta replace it. I replace mine roughly once a year. Here's another tip. Don't buy a set of pans. Buy the cookware you need one piece at a time as you need it. For most tasks in my house, cheap cast iron is the go-to. I like it from a yard sale, but if you got to buy new at the store, you can do that too. And this leaves room to say, yeah, if you love to cook a high-end all-clad or Le Creuset pot, that is the occasional treat that I think can be worth it. Although I would still wait for them to go on sale. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. This is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, we'll ask former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about the both legal and legally challenged ideas being bounced around in the final days before Trump takes office.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, January 9th, 2025. Have your host, James J. Mayloff, here. Welcoming into the studio, our good friend, Matt Lippert, UW-Madison Extension, Wood County's Ag Agent and Educator. Matt, it is always good to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good to be with you, James.
Appreciate the time. I wanted to start off right away, Matt, talking a little bit about sustainability and how that is impacting our 2025.
Sure. So... we talk about sustainability quite a bit in our extension programming, and We often talk about a three-legged stool. So there's different views on what sustainability is, but certainly a lot of people who are consumers of agriculture have a desire that agriculture should be sustainable. And I think that's why we see interest in things like organics, perceived to be maybe more sustainable, concern about, maybe greenhouse emissions from agriculture not sustainable. Of course, if you have life, you're going to be emitting greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. But also there's a circle there, right? So agriculture is very integrally involved in that relationship. But I talked about the stool. So we talk about a farmer definitely needs to survive in our kind of free market economy. We need economic sustainability. And then it should not be at the expense of environmental sustainability. And then the third one challenges people is their sense of social sustainability. So I'll use a dairy industry because I know it so well. Dairy farms have gotten significantly bigger. And it's in much of agriculture, that's the case. And so that means a social impact of that is if there's bigger farms, there's also fewer farms. And so that means it affects rural communities. There get to be fewer farm families. If a farmer can own large equipment and harvest thousands of acres when just a generation before they were maybe not even managing 100 acres, you lose families by maybe a factor of 10 or more. And so that affects rural school districts. It affects rural retail business. I think another social aspect is a large dairy may be not being harmful environmentally, but the neighbor still senses that it's affecting their quality of life from noise or traffic or because it's a big business. So there's those three aspects that I would encourage everyone to look at and think about when they think about sustainability is that farmers need it to be economically viable. Certainly for the long run in the future, that needs to definitely combine with environmental sustainability. And then, as I said, social comment, what people feel about agriculture as well. I got a chance to experience some of this. I was with a group of mainly Canadian dairy farmers in November. We started out in Amsterdam, but we spent the greatest part of our trip in Germany. And so we see a lot, and we were visiting farms. We were farmers, so we did some tourist things, but we visited farms. And certainly the European Economic Union has a lot of different regulations, sensibilities, things that they're looking for in agriculture that are different than in North America with the Canadians and us in the U.S. different still. So that was a very interesting aspect.
Just a couple of follow-up questions on this. So for one, when it comes to that three-legged approach, certainly the ag industry is working hard on that and trying to go forward with it. Are there things we as consumers, we as people on the outside of this that want to support the industry can do to help with that? Being informed, I would imagine that's a big
awareness,
part of it.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And and that's not actually it can't be strictly the consumer's job. So what are you going to do? You're going to get on the internet, or you're going to go to your news media, and you're going to vote with your pocketbook when you make choices in the store. But I do. I spend a fair amount of time on Facebook and. These people that have thousands of followers that I guess they're called influencers. The influencers that I follow are fellow dairy farmers. And it's interesting to see some of them get right in your face challenging, maybe some people that you'd describe as an animal rights activist or someone who thinks that who doesn't really know, because they're not really on dairy farms, they still feel they know how, for example, dairy cattle are cared for or maybe perceived as not cared for, you know. So I guess what I would ask consumers is that, you can't expect everyone to become an advocate for my cause, agriculture, but to just become more aware. And if you find something that you think that milk has antibiotics in it, or there's an inhumane practice with poultry, or whatever it is, to explore that a little more and find out, well, because the normal reaction of the dairy farmers is a dairy farmer wants a cow to be very healthy. Mm-hmm. And healthy is also mentally. The cow has to be happy. Mm. So a very common one is, the calves are removed very quickly. And so that's not natural, you know. So they do a pretty good job of explaining that, it's best for everybody concerned. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's all we can do is, and the university's involved in things like that too. We have great information on animal husbandry and so forth.
If I could just piggyback on that, Matt, a little bit. One, I think that as somebody who grew up in a cause family with a lot of passions and a lot of causes, I get very on my soapbox about things from time to time. But one of the things I have learned as I've gotten older is I don't know everything.
None of us do.
Nobody does. And the more homework I do on something, sometimes the less I feel like I know. And I need to actually talk to people in the industry. Yeah. And so I would definitely recommend that if you have questions, have things, reach out to farmers, reach out to ag industry members to get like straight up answers. No middleman, just talking right to a source. I think that is one thing. And if I can add also, For one, animals do not think and feel like we do. And I am a gigantic animal lover. I came in the light with late in life with animals. I didn't grow up with them. But boy, do I love dogs. We just had the Humane Society in today, and I'm still thinking about the dog that was in here. I'm trying to do my job. I'm trying to focus on the conversation, but I'm thinking of the dog. But the people that I know and that truly do care about animals and fight for animal rights, they'll be the first ones to tell you, we put our feelings and thoughts on animals way too much. And for what you think an animal might be struggling for, that animal, that's day-to-day life for them. That they're not feeling the emotions you do and stuff. While they do feel, and it is important to care for our animals, as you just touched on there with the milk and that example, I think that we oftentimes too much put on there. It's no different than, guess what? Your dog probably doesn't like that Halloween costume. That's for you. That's for you, not the dog. The dog didn't ask for to put that
didn't
on.
Didn't ask for that.
We do that too much with animals, where we put our wants and needs onto them way too often. There is a good balance there of caring about animals while also understanding that we're putting things on them that they don't really feel or have. And just real quick, I appreciate what you said there about not people, you know, caring about things just because you do. But I would say that we are all impacted by the ag industry, and we're all.
Oh, we all depend on it, right? We all eat.
We definitely need to care about this.
We also use other things from agriculture, obviously, like cotton and so forth. There's a lot of byproducts from animal agriculture that end up in the pharmaceuticals. We cannot separate the fact that we exist on the earth from this industry that we think is degrading the earth somehow, because we all need to eat.
Yeah.
And so we want to do that efficiently, right?
Yeah.
And efficiency might be scale, right? It might be largeness, but certainly efficiency is a aspect of sustainability. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about projecting human likes and desires, I'm thinking of, it's January and my phone says it's 18 degrees out now. So this is not as classic a one as some things, but a lot of people get concerned about livestock outside, and certainly your dog. You know, I have a dog. I love my dog. She is a German short hair pointer. Mm. So she has very short hair. And so she doesn't live, she's not a husky. She's not going to be outside all winter. Very athletic, but winter is not going to be hours at a time outdoors. Yeah. But our horses, our Holstein cows that weigh 1,500 pounds, their internal body temperature, they're like really happy on a morning like this when the sun is out. You'll see them, they'll position themselves in the lot so that they're getting the maximum solar, and they're chewing their cud. They're not out there shivering, wishing that someone went and protected them. They are, so there's an example where you cannot project you as a human that maybe weighs 180 pounds or whatever you weigh. You're more like my dog that isn't going to be an outdoor creature versus some of these large livestock.
Yeah, it's a great example. I learned a little of that from my youngest. My youngest daughter, Isabel, her favorite animal is cows. And she's taught me so much about cows. And that was one of the things she talked to me about. Because I think like a lot of people, you wonder about that stuff. It's a great one. And I appreciate you mentioning that. We're speaking with Matt Lippert, UW-Madison Extension, Wood County's ag agent. Matt, you mentioned that you did some traveling recently. You went out to Europe and that. And you, last time we talked, you had mentioned that you've got a trip coming up to Italy. Once I got through all of my jealousy about that, I did come across an article that I thought was really interesting and I've been hanging on to. There was a group of 20 Italian farmers that were in Wisconsin over a couple of weeks ago on vacation visiting ag businesses. The tour guide kind of showed them some of the practices and some of the things we do here. And while they were doing this as just kind of for fun, they ended up taking away a lot of information that they felt could be very helpful for them over there. You mentioned that you did get to do a little bit of sightseeing, but it sounds like that was a big part of your going over to Europe, in, whether it was Germany or not, or maybe even your trip to Italy. Whether it's for fun or not, I imagine that brain of yours doesn't turn off. And the idea of sharing information up and down the state here in Wisconsin was one of the early things that you taught me. The idea of how the soil is different up north to down south and how farmers share this information. I thought that was really interesting. Now we're extending that even farther to across the pond, if you will.
Oh, so we're very interconnected here in the world. I'm going to go back to my own farm, which is, I think, a pretty nice farm, but it's not it's not like the only one of its type in the world. And in the last year, we've had, through the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, we had a group of people from Indonesia visit our farm, and as tourists, basically. And then we have had, as a smaller group, working on some technologies actually regarding methane emissions, we've had Israelis. And we also had Italians.
Yeah.
So this is a pretty common thing in agriculture, that there is a lot to be gained. We in the U.S. In general, but also in agriculture, travel abroad less than perhaps like people from Australia, New Zealand, or Europe. They travel abroad more. And, you know, I'm not going to tell anyone how to spend their time. And there's a lot to see in this country. And if that's what you're comfortable with, that's good. But there is a lot to be gained. So on my trip with to Germany, it was actually largely with Canadians. And so in the dairy industry, they have a quota system that they get better prices than we do for our and more consistent prices for their milk. But they have to invest in this quota. It's a barrier to entering the industry. And so you learn when you're on riding a bus for 10 days with these people, you learn how that affects them. And then certainly in the EU, there's, when I get to go to Italy, that will be again in the EU, a very much different regulatory environment, more regulated, but also more government support than we get here in the U.S. So through the EU, consumer concerns about how much time an animal gets to go outside, do they actually get to graze? Is it a quality grazing? Or there's more of that in Europe than we have here. But they actually pay farmers they incentivize them to do these practices. So I don't know that we're anxious to get more regulation control here in the U.S., but it's interesting to see how government, societies, economics, and a person trying to run a farm, how all those things interplay together.
had a friend in high school that was an exchange student from Scotland. And I remember her and I talking a lot about, especially her being in the middle of Wisconsin here and just kind of never experiencing America until coming right here. And she was blown away by not only how many farms she saw and everything, but also how it didn't seem like, for her, where she was from, farmers were considered very high on the community leadership board or something, and how she didn't see it as much here, and the respect that was given. It seems like, and this was 20 years ago and everything, but it did seem like that there was an understanding there of something here that we try to get across all the time, and how important our ag industry is, how important it is, how it is the backbone of our country. It feels like it's very common knowledge there, where here, it's something that I don't want to say we're beating a drum and we're trying to get through people's heads or anything. I think there's a lot of people that do get that, but there are some that just don't seem to. And it did seem like the empathy there was just evident, where here we're trying to create that a little bit more.
And I've been near Scotland. I've never been to Scotland itself, but in Europe, and I think this is going a little bit away because World War II is now 80 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So, but there was hunger in Europe after World War II. A lot of infrastructure was destroyed. People were displaced and farms weren't working. So at least on the continent and maybe in Scotland, obviously they lucked out. They weren't in the front lines of World War II. But there was a great appreciation of people that weren't directly involved in agriculture, that they needed farmers to eat, right?
Yeah. I didn't even thought of that. That's an amazing point. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've talked a little bit about regulations and some of the government effect of this. When it comes to the other farmers out there, people that are in similar industries to you and that, were there techniques, were there things you could pick up from that that were interesting to you and that you've thought, oh, maybe I can do that on my farm, or maybe this will help my friend or another farm?
Oh, it was a very recurring theme with the trip to Germany, which I anticipated. We've talked a little bit about robotics on dairy farms. So we use that term for machines that will milk your cows is a classic one. And there's a couple ways to do that. The cow can, it's kind of a neat thing. The cow is, her udder gets full. She wants to get milked. And there you go. Some people that are trying to fight the dairy industry will tell you cows are forcibly milked. Well, no, they want to get milked, right?
Yeah.
And so on a robotic farm, they will show up to the milker typically about three times a day, and they're incentivized also. They get a little cow candy, so they get a snack, and they get milked. But they have to cooperate. They have to stand there and let this robot use laser and sense where their teats are and apply the milker. So Europe is the main companies that build robotics are based in Germany, Netherlands, and France, and it's probably what they get paid for their milk more, or a shorter labor pool, even though that is there's a lot of interest on that here in North America. The interest came on that stuff quicker in Europe. And so we saw a lot of robotics while there, milking, calf feeding, assembling the ration for the cows and different tools that, on my farm today, there was a person that showed up at 5:30 in the morning, and they're going to be there until probably 1, and they're going to be feeding all these cattle. So it's pretty efficient because they're feeding hundreds of animals. But on a robotic farm, it's even more efficient because this machine does all of that, and the farmer has to make sure the machine keeps working, or they may have to deliver some feed to an area for the machine to assemble it. And then there's robotic. You think about your Roomba, that vacuums your floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they can do that with cow slurry and pens, too.
Wow.
So a lot of robotics, if you think about Europe, kind of a zero population growth. Here in North America, too, there is just not there's not as many people that want to work outdoors on a day like today as there used to be. And so a lot of interest in robotics and leading us a little bit in that technology of things we got to see.
Very interesting, and always an interesting conversation with you, Matt. I really do appreciate the time. Thank you again for everything you shared with us. I want to wish you safe travels, safe trip and everything. Looking forward to when you get back and I can live vicariously through you on what it was like to be in Italy. We want to remind you that you can find out more about our friends from Extension and all the amazing people that are working over there at extension.wisc.edu. That's extension.wisc.edu. Matt, thank you again for the time. We'll talk again real soon.
Thank you, James.
We'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Here's what the WSJ had said after J6. This week has probably finished Donald Trump as a serious political figure. Boy, that hasn't aged well, has
no,
it?
No, not at all. In the Wall Street Journal. So after what they just said 4 years ago, Maggie, they couldn't bring it upon themselves to say that guy who did that shouldn't be anywhere near the White House again. Nope, couldn't do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Donald J. Trump has been officially certified the winner of the 2024 election the way that the Constitution dictates. You see how simple that is? There's a vote, you certify the results, democracy moves on. You might not like the results. The person I wanted to have elected didn't win, but that's the way democracy works. Unlike 4 years ago on January 6th, where rioters stormed the Capitol.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Max Inc. Radio, original local music from Wisconsin, Saturday and Sunday, 6 to midnight. This weekend, we welcome brand new band Take Back the Sun, and Terry chats with Aaron Schulke about Wisconsin polka. It's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report. Winds have weakened somewhat in the Los Angeles area, but the major wildfires are still 0% contained. At least five people have died. 1,300 structures have been lost. Kelly Lauren lost her home in the Palisades fire.
I lost all my writing, like all my books. You're like tearing up. It's like, it's just hard.
President Biden says the federal government will cover 100% of the recovery costs for 6 months.
I told the governor and local officials, spare no expense to do what they need to do and contain these fires and in their communities that have really been devastated.
Vice President Kamala Harris says a lot of families will need a lot of help.
Sadly, many insurance companies have canceled insurance for a lot of the families who have been affected and will be affected, which is only going to delay or place an added burden on their ability to recover.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Wallace.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Brittany Merlot. The University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point got a new chief of police. Derek Tritz tells us more.
Chief Michelle Haywood was sworn in on Monday as the new chief of police and security services for the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Haywood is an experienced law enforcement officer with 27 years of service in the Milwaukee Police Department. She has completed training in active standby ship for law enforcement through the FBI National Academy and is active in professional law enforcement organizations, such as the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. Haywood now reports to Pratima Gandhi, the Vice Chancellor of Business Affairs at the university, who said she's looking forward to Haywood's leadership and believes that her extensive experience will help maintain a high standard of safety for both students and faculty. Tony Babel, the university's previous chief, retired at the end of 2024, after nearly 7 years of service, during which he played an integral role in the university's response to the pandemic.
And the store, convenience stores in central Wisconsin, have transitioned to a new operator. Reliance Fuel, a Pennsylvania-based company, acquired the store locations from Team Sherrill in late December. They say all associates have retained their positions and all current locations remain open. Reliance Fuel will continue to offer the Impact Rewards Plus program. And they say in the future, the store will be updated to carry its Fuel on Wisconsin branding. Team Sherrill will continue to operate 7 Sherrill Tire and Auto Service locations and 30 Subway restaurants. And a study on PFAS and wastewater shows an increase in the so-called forever chemicals. A concerning trend is nearly half of all drinking water is contaminated now. Scientists say that some of the factors for the increase include the use of chemicals and medication and the effects of drought on local water systems. I'm Brittany Merlot for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks roll over the Spurs.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks with a 121-105 win over the Spurs last night, snapping a 3-game losing streak at home for Milwaukee. Giannis with his 432nd career double-double, surpassing the franchise record set by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Damian Lillard on the Bucks' best performance since beating the Thunder for the NBA Cup.
Everything starts with, you know, our focus. And I think, you know, we've just been more focused coming off some games that we feel like we should have won. Ultimately, like, what's going to give us a chance to win games and what are we doing when we're at our best?
College Hoops, Wisconsin hosts Minnesota, 6 o'clock tomorrow night. NFL, it's the Packers and the Eagles, Sunday at 3:30. Packers quarterbacks Jordan Love, an elbow injury. Malik Willis, his right thumb, limited in practice. I asked Love about losing Christian Watson to a torn ACL.
That's a huge loss. It's one of those ones that it sucks. You know, you hurt for Christian, especially at this time of the year.
That's Jordan Love with Sports on Mike.